The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And then on the margin, on the maybe on the right, if you could put which date. May 20th or June 17th. They're Saturdays. I want you, if you're planning to go, you need to write down the clearance information, because I need to submit it. You have to get clearance, which means from the authorities and the government, the police, the FBI.
They check
your record. Find out if. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So what happens is that. Chances are they'll let you out. So what they do is they take this information and they do kind of a police search for you, or whatever the way they do, to find out if you have a record of any kind or if you've caused trouble in the prisons before or something. And then if there is, then you can't come in.
So where do I go do that?
On this sheet there.
Oh.
So what I do is I send this to the GRIP program that's organizing this for us, and they send it on to the prison, and they do their clearance work, and then when everyone has clearance, then we're told, and then you can go in, and then when you go there, there's a record that you have clearance and that you're coming, and they check you off, and you can come in. And then, so I guess we're all here. So it's a couple of things. So what's new that I haven't seen before?
Sage, I believe.
Oh, did Sage not here? Don't know.
Did she speak to anyone before?
I didn't speak with her, but I was on the front deck and I saw her walk her like that. And that was about 10 minutes ago.
Okay.
I can message her.
Great, thank you. So there's another form that you have to fill out if you want to go, which we've never had to do before. There's a new one. And this is policy information for volunteers and contractors, Part A. And it has to do with the prison rape elimination policy of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. It gives historical reasons for this, about how the CDCR is committed to providing a safe, humane, secure environment for everyone, professional behavior, and then you have to read this, and then you have to sign it, date it, and then in this one, you have to, third page, you have to kind of click off yes or no if you've engaged in sexual abuse in a prison, jail, lockup, if you've ever been convicted of engaging or attempting to engage in sexual activity in a community facilitated by force. Anyway, so this is a new thing that I have to submit in order to get you in. So those of you who are planning to go, if you would, and if you want a copy of this, I can email it to you later. But I think if you can sign it, then I think that, you know, you probably don't need to read it. Yeah. Which way they are?
Which day?
No, it's going to be both days. Both dates are possible, and we have room for about six or seven people to go in in May, and we have room for three in June. And last time that was the division. There were three of you in June, and there were seven, I think, for May. So hopefully that's still the case, because and that's why. But there's little bit of wiggle room because Alan's available both days, so we'll see. And also, not all of you might be going. So, who wanted to go last time?
Can we have more coffee for me? Yes, I don't have one.
You don't have. Oh, I thought I printed 10 of them. Well, not everyone's good. There's only.
Oh, sorry.
Barbara's warning them.
I'm warning them. Mm. Are you only have one? Yeah.
Thank you. You got a record now.
Okay.
So, other announcements that we need to make. You know, the end of the program is in sight. So, in terms of doing the writings and papers to be submitted, that should be, you know, keep in mind that they're due if you want to get a completion in the program. And I think that's the only announcements I have to make. Do you have any, Paul or Jennifer?
I was just thinking if you missed more than one class, there's a process by which you can, what would be the verb there, remedy that by listening to the class the day you missed and then writing an essay on it, if you missed more than one, and you want a completion. If you don't want a completion, and just then you would get a participation, a certificate that said you participated in the course. But if you're going on to further education, you probably do want to have a completion. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I know you can see this on the website, but how many essays do we have? Like, we've got the Dharmology, and then I think we have two more.
Yes, please.
How do we know that you actually receive our paper?
Well, you're supposed to get a comments back from the teacher. Who's reading your paper?
Jennifer.
Yeah, so I think Jennifer has been replying to people. So I don't know what have you gotten no replies from her?
I think probably the last two papers.
Yeah. So why don't you say that on the microphone? That way Jennifer can hear and she can respond. She's she's been.
Jennifer.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure I did it right. I mean, I did load my paper on Slack for you, but okay. Can you just say yep? Because I don't know if you've received them.
Okay, I'll do it right now.
Okay.
I'm in the same boat too.
Sri is in the same boat.
Okay.
Does anybody have any news about clearance?
So today he's very busy, that's what he said on the Slack.
Oh, I didn't see that. Okay, so for work.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't leave it blank. I think that's going to be the grip. Someone else will fill that out. Just your name. I think it's a top line. I think anything you don't understand, leave it blank. Just for you. I don't know who it is. I've never seen this before, but it's either the grip program or it's someone at the prison will do it, or. If you need another one, I'll print it up. Yes?
This is a winding up question, but we'll have Will we have like a next steps or opportunities class at some point, or have other people come in and talk about other ways we can serve or apply the things we've learned?
The only thing that's been planned is for Vanessa to come on Zoom, I think in the June class, to talk about CPE, the clinical pastoral education, which is the next professional route for people. And so if you're interested in that, even if you're not interested, it's wonderful to learn about what CPE is. And so I think the plan was for her to do it just before lunch in the June class. And then she'd be available at the beginning of lunch just on Zoom if you want to ask questions about how that works. But I don't think we've never done any other follow-up, because that's, we can answer questions for you if you have ideas, but sometimes one of the follow-ups from many years ago was someone that created an annual chaplaincy symposium here at IMC, and it was kind of a little bit of a reunion for people who did the program. And that probably went for 12, 13 years. And then it ran the course for him to do it, and then now it hasn't happened. No one else has picked it up. But that was a wonderful event that happened. And the first one was kind of like one of the first national symposiums for Buddhist chaplains, and people flew in from all over for it. It was kind of exciting. And so it's a young field, Buddhist chaplaincy. Yes? If you do this, then
just wondering if there is something like a alumni group for the chaplaincy program.
What kind of alumni group?
Yeah,
there's an alumni, kind of an alumni email. Group email kind of situation that you can sign up for.
Uh-huh.
And that's sometimes been more or less active over time. And sometimes the only other thing, alumni, that comes out of our program is that sometimes we send messages to alumni for things we think they'd be interested in that we're doing or happening here. So that's the extent of it. I don't think there's much more, but there's certainly a lot of room for alumni things. But yeah, it would have to be, just like the chaplaincy symposium came out of a graduate who kept it going. For other alumni things, it would have to come out of the alumni themselves, because Jennifer Paul and I, and we're not going to be probably putting so much effort in. We'll support things, but we don't necessarily initiate them beyond the program.
Okay. One thought, again, we have time, we can think about it, but it's just have some sort of a alumni, a Slack channel or some sort of a weekly or monthly or kind of chance to get together and kind of share what they're learning, what's working, what's not working, kind of thing. So
yes, I think that's great. So some of the years we've done that, but there's been groups of people who have stayed in touch, some for years. I think one group is still meeting after 10 years. Mm. But it's a small subgroup, it's not the whole group.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
they were a local group that met every month during the program. Mm. And they enjoyed so much that they kept doing it.
Okay.
So that you have, that's would also come from initiative from the group. If you want to do the whole group and have some way of staying connected as a group, someone here would have to organize that, and that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Or it could be a subgroup here that somehow feels like you live close enough to each other that, and you want to be able to meet in person or something.
Right.
So you have a few months now to think about it and talk to each other.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
I have an announcement.
Yes.
Are we turning these in now?
Ideally.
Where?
Here. In front of the bell, because that's the sacred place.
The sacred place?
Yes. We're laughing at the sacred.
What are they giving you?
There was a form to fill out to go to Soledad.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
And
my announcement is on behalf of Vanessa, but
next year, I don't know if you got an email or not, but we're having a virtual course next year, so that's going to round that out to the in-person course. And so, if you know people, Vanessa and I are doing an introduction to the courses on April 22nd. It's on the Satsang website, just a online, you know, what is chaplaincy, what is Buddhist chaplaincy, one of these courses. We'll also be talking about the eco-chaplaincy course and having somebody from that group. So big news to go virtual. It's a big launching for us. It's been in the works for a couple of years. And an information session for people that are interested coming up, and you can find information on the Sati website. Yeah.
On June 22nd, there's a half-day introduction to it all.
April
22nd. April
20th.
What?
Is there a referral bonus?
Are there referrals? You get a bonus.
Yeah.
For the referral, yes. And so some of you might want to do it again online. You didn't get enough the first time. We did it online the first full year of the pandemic, and it was kind of exciting fun. It was all these people who came from all over who normally wouldn't be able to do this because of the travel in Canada and Europe and East Coast, and so that was exciting. And so now having this parallel one online is kind of will also allow for kind of a wider community. Any other kind of things for this announcement period? Okay.
Okay, so we'll move into our next session. Our next session is to encourage you to talk about all your greatest mistakes in terms of being a chaplain. I mean, there's a saying in Zen. Let me just take this off. Saying in Zen that says, practice is one continuous mistake. The notion being this, that's what the learning process is. You start doing something, and in the process of doing it, you learn how to do it. And so you learn from, we learn from our successes, but our mistakes usually have more to teach us. And then our mistakes are usually often there's a kind of a negative valence to it. You know, this is like something maybe you don't even want to admit, or in terms of having made what seemed like a transgression, or maybe discovering a personal limitation, or not knowing of a certain protocol, or not knowing of how to handle a certain kind of situation that arises. And part of the learning process of being a chaplain is a little bit like, you know, when you're learning how to do meditation, and you've got the idea, it's about being present. And then when your mind wanders and you're not present, you know, it stirs up notions of failure or lack of success or something terrible or something terrible about you that this happened. And then as you repeat that straying of attention, we discover a different attitude and relationship with it. That often where your mind strayed has something to teach you. And something, in very general terms, something the same of your chaplaincy. You know, can you look at a so-called mistake as a learning opportunity? You know? There's something at the heart of our intention to be of service that carries a certain kind of truth for us, and then we find ourselves falling short, deviating, not for one reason or another. And so the challenge and the opportunity for this session is to share particular situations that arose for you where you felt somehow how you handled the situation, or upon reflection how you would have hoped to have handled it, or maybe you just came away from it. Like I remember once someone said, and I went into this hospital room, and the patient, a man, had exposed himself. And I felt very upset by that. And then I just left. But it didn't feel good. You know, it didn't feel like, well, okay, that was just what should have happened. It felt like, no, that wasn't what should have happened. And the person actually didn't feel like they knew what should have happened, but they did feel like what happened and how they responded didn't feel good. So, not to ask you to kind of say, well, tell us something that happened that was inappropriate, and then tell us the wonderful response you had. Maybe it's still lingering for you. You know, it's like, well, this came up, and I still, to this day, I still have some questions about it. And sharing it with the group, it offers a kind of a group learning, you know, in two ways. One, there's the specific instance that you share it with the group, and somehow in that process we all learn. And then the other way is in sharing it with the group, we all learn that none of us always do everything exactly as it should be done. You know? That we all have our moments when we deviate or just come away from a situation feeling like, well, what would be the best way to deal with that? You know? Like in our conversation this morning, I think it was Alan was mentioning, and maybe a couple of others too, like how to relate to someone who has dementia or profound delusions. You know, it can create all sorts of situations that are just, there is no easy answer in a way. So both of those, the particular kind of instance and just the discovery that all of us has in our own way had situations that might be helpful for the group to discuss. And there's something in, not just in the learning, but in a way, the maturation as a chaplain. that you don't have to be perfect, and you don't have to have the perfect response every time. And there's always more to learn, you know? So now, hopefully, one of you will feel permission or inspiration to pick up one of the mics and offer the group an instance in your chaplaincy. Thank you, Alan.
Funny you should ask. I was just reflecting in one of our dyads this morning on an interaction that is still present and unresolved and undigested in my own mind. I was volunteering at evening dinner put on for homeless in Marin, in San Rafael. And this was a particularly large and energized one. It was the Thanksgiving dinner this past year, day before. And so it was a pretty ambitious event. There was quite a lot of volunteers, maybe, I don't know, 65 or 70 homeless guests being served Thanksgiving dinner. I was milling around afterwards, and a gentleman caught my eye. And I just had an intuition that he wanted to talk to somebody. So I made myself, available. And on reflection, I don't think that he was homeless. I think that he had wound up at that dinner because he became interested in relating to a woman at the grocery store who is part of that homeless community, although I think she actually is housed. In any event, he was fairly well-dressed, and he had a white goatee and intense eye gaze, which I met. And I had been in a reverie at how lovely the event had been, how amazingly authentic and relaxed and welcome all of the guests had been, and a lot of expressions of appreciation. And the staff was really good and engaged, and it was really a lovely event. And he looked at me with these piercing blue eyes, and he goes, This event is really bad. There's no spiritual teaching going on here. This is this is just flesh. I get up, he said, I pray every morning, and I have powers, I heal people. This is just, nobody's talking about the gospel, nobody's is preaching the word of God. This is just flesh. And he was, you know, he was angry. He was disappointed and he was angry. And it really caught me, you know, off guard. It was way out of the context of what I was expecting to be and who I was expecting to be at this event, which is serving homeless, not dealing with the, you know, the wrath and resentment of fundamentalist dogmatism. And I sort of reflected back to him, you know, well, I can hear you're disappointed. And it sounds like you had different expectations for this event. You know, asking him what those expectations were, he just started to repeat himself. This is just flesh. This is, you're just providing sustenance for the flesh. You're not feeding those souls. I admit to a real bias and consternation in regard to the extremes of ideological, political fundamentalism that, you know, has emerged in a major theme in our society. I really have hesitations and difficulties in encountering that kind of energy and humanizing it. It's scary to me. And to this day, I don't feel that I met the energy of that moment in a way that was really skillful or kind of reflected my heart. I, at the very least, would like to have left a stone in his path. You know, something that he would be walking away chewing on. And that hesitation is, the recollection is still vivid in my mind, and with it, the sort of the taste of my own hesitation. And it was slightly intimidating. And there it is.
I have a suggestion. So ask yourself, is there anything you'd like to ask Alan about that encounter that would help you have a response to it? Is that clear?
No.
So you might say, well, it would help me to know how many people were in the room. It would help me to know how close he was standing, or it would help me to know, was he frightened or was he angry? It sounds like he was angry, but any further information that would help you have conjure up how you would respond to that situation? And if there isn't, there isn't. I mean, but just to give you that opportunity.
How big was he? How old was he?
He was in his probably his late 50s or early 60s. He was big. He was like a big Texas guy, barrel chested. He had a cowboy hat.
So taller than you.
Yeah.
You think that the size intimidated you too?
that I was mostly intimidated by the force of his resentment.
So he was a man of a lot of energy?
Yes.
So it was not just speaking, but there was his whole embodiment had power to it.
Yeah. Well, I recall the way in which his deprecation of this is just flesh. You're just feeding, you know, animals here. You're like feeding animal bodies. You're not doing anything.
So you express it using your hands to express it
for their spirit.
Can you stand and show a little bit of his?
Yeah.
Maybe come a little bit closer than this. Jennifer can see too.
this is just flesh. You're just feeding bodies. You're not doing anything to save their souls.
And was he interested in you?
I'm sorry, what?
Did he have any interest in you and knowing who you were? Was there any no pleasantries at the beginning?
No.
Just he just went off.
Yeah, it was clear to me that he had sort of attracted my attention from a bit of a distance, and then we were standing outside. There was a big dinner hall where this was happening. We were just outside the door, and I felt that he had sort of attracted me into his energy sphere in order to land this message.
How did the incident end?
I just think we sort of nodded and moved on. You know, it didn't really end in a resolution. I described the things that I did to kind of mirror to him what he was saying. You know, so which ended in a sort of apology. I'm sorry you didn't get what you were looking for or what you came here for.
Was the context one? You weren't like two people really meeting. It sounds like it was more like he got your eye, you came over, and you're kind of in passing almost.
No, I mean we were you know face to face.
You really had stopped for him and were really there with him.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was a kind of repeated exchange, and that was when I went into mirroring.
And then when it was finished, you just kind of nodded, okay, and walked away?
Something like that. I mean, there was no place that the energy was going.
Uh-huh.
So I wanted out, you know.
And I imagine that you could have you probably could have imagined a better scenario, better exchange or better outcome. Could you imagine one, or was that unimaginable?
This morning it occurred to me that I could, that it would have been interesting if I had said something like, can you recall a time in your own life when you were really suffering? And sort of come in from the side where I'm sort of like almost supporting him or appreciating him, but seeing if I could draw him into something more empathetic.
Uh-huh. Great. So I partly asked all these questions get it going here and demonstrate a little bit how it could be done. There's other ways, but if you want to step in now, please.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Alan, where were you? Like, were you sitting at a table?
No, we were. He and I were standing just outside the door of the dining hall of this Thanksgiving dinner. Total attendance.
Were there people in earshot who kind of overheard him and his statements?
Possibly a few, but peripherally. It wasn't like a scene, done for others.
Why don't you hold on to the mic?
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, did you have a sense that he was, that he wanted to engage with you and wanted you to engage, or was he just, you know, making a pronouncement kind of thing?
Well, he certainly drew me into that conversation. Yeah. Yeah. But he didn't have any place to go with it. He wanted to proclaim that he prayed a lot, you know, all of his credentials. He wanted to proclaim that, and he wanted to issue this judgmental deprecation. And
did he look
at you like waiting for your response? Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel like he may have just really wanted to be seen, whatever the emotions were coming up for him, like that was enough?
Enough is an interesting word. I don't know what enough was there. I mean, I offered that much, you know. He got somebody to vent to. I felt incomplete. You know, I felt like I could have, that there's some kind of an opportunity in there that I was too intimidated to meet fully. That's where my thought went about if I could actually get him to admit that he knew what it was to suffer personally, to be in pain. You know, then maybe I could have seen if there was some way to elicit some kind of something more empathic with regard to the, you know, the energy of this place, which was really beautiful in its own way. And a sort of this kind of a heartbreak that to not be able to draw him into that, share that. It's probably an impossible task, but I felt like I could have showed up more.
I think she had her head. She was trying before, so maybe.
Was the event a religious event?
No, absolutely not. It was Thanksgiving dinner for homeless, and other than very simple non-denominational appreciation, there wasn't any religious dogma to it at all. It was really the offering and generosity of doing this beautiful meal.
Was he a donor in any way?
I don't believe so. His only appearance there was, what, like I said, I think he had met a person at the grocery store and started conversation and wound up, she said she was going there, and so he tagged along.
I might be missing the whole point, but salvation, there's many ways to salvation. Maybe that's his truth. He might be right, but sometimes you need to feed the body before you can go to the soul. So we, you know, the people are doing different work in the community. Some people just feed, you know, provide them what they need materialistically, and when they are fulfilled, then they can start thinking about other things. So I think he's not right, he's not wrong, and that what that place is providing is not wrong. It might be insufficient in his mind, but I think it's still good deed.
Alan, I had a question very related to that. If you were to take the notion of feeding the soul and fit that inside your own spiritual sensibilities, how would you express it?
that the, I mean, from my perspective, that feeding the body in an environment of upliftedness and celebration and care and generosity is inseparable from feeding the soul. That this event had huge, evident, abundant, sort of overflowing joy and appreciation in and of it and around it. And I was sort of, and he was essentially on the outside of that and unable to see it. And I guess part of my own reflecting on my own, you know, lack of meeting that was that I didn't feel that I had the sort of skill or courage or power or whatever it was to actually bring him into what seemed completely obvious to me as pervading the environment. That in a certain way he was the he was actually the starving soul in that moment. He was sort of starving on an island of his own ideology and spiritual pride.
Imagine he walked in the door right now and you paused him and said, "Do you remember me? Remember that evening we had the day before Thanksgiving? And now I'd like to say to you how for me it was indeed, well, how would you articulate it for him?"
Wow.
In a way that offers a kindness, not as a kind of rebuttal, but as a as a hand, offering a hand of fellowship.
I guess where I'm hesitating is I'm sort of feeling the power of that dogmatism, and I could meet it with some kind of opinion, right, which is futile. But what I had the impulse to do was to see how I could, if there was a way to draw him out of that into some more uncertain or open ground. That's a hard sell.
So let's see. Does anyone have some words or phrases? Letitia has.
I don't know if I have words or phrases, but sometimes agreeing first and just acknowledging his point of view. It's like, yes, you're absolutely right. There's no spiritual guidance being offered here today. You're absolutely right. This is truly about feeding the flesh today. But in the realm of, is it Maslow's? Hierarchy of needs. The flesh has to be fed first. You can't feed the spirit to hungry flesh. They're not. They can't listen. They can't hear. They can't absorb. They can't, you know, take in that spiritual message when they're hungry. And so today, we're only feeding the flesh, but there are opportunities tomorrow to feed the soul.
Can anybody do that message in the language of Scripture, of biblical Scripture?
What a great question.
Jesus had to feed his acolytes. He made bread and wine and fish, right? Loaves and fishes came first, and then he gave them the sermon. That's the only one I remember.
I don't know if we're ready, but I have another question.
About the same topic? Of course, yes.
Well, not about Scripture.
Well, no.
Which I agree. I wonder how you felt in your body during this interaction with him.
Intimidated. And there's a larger issue here because I'm holding this consideration for every Trumpian evangelist that I hold bias against and fear of.
Yeah, so that my listening as it's proceeding, as it's unfolding, I'm thinking more and more, this is less to do with him and more to do with you. This is a personal thing that's going on. Not looking for a better reply to him is not the answer that it's going to serve you.
Well, I think looking for a reply to him is looking for language to deal with the pain of social division, polarization, oppression.
Right.
I think that has a lot to do with me, but it also has a lot to do with the reflection of our time.
Yeah. So I do hear that this is more to do with you and your pain, and that you're, in the way you're talking about it, you're looking externally for a solution, for something you could have done. But I think maybe, wouldn't there be a good chaplain who was there next to you probably would have turned to you and said, Ellen, what's happening here with you? What's your need? what's this about for you? Because that's what I'm hearing now. The reference point for me in this situation is, in terms of the man, nothing was needed from you. There was no need for you to reply, no need to do anything for him. He wasn't asking for anything from you. So it would have been easy to just like nodded and walked away, and it would have been not a lost chaplaincy situation. But you got caught there. You were caught in something as a chaplain, and you're going to be caught. And I recognize myself when I'm in what I'm talking to you about. You're going to get caught over and over again because of this something in you about the dogmatic Trumpian religious people. And so there's something really here that you need to caretake. So the next time you meet something like this, you're not triggered.
See, and I had a complementary perspective, but slightly different. The reason I asked you...
Hey guys, can you just slow down? I think what Gil just said was a lot.
Okay.
So I want to watch our pace because we're kind of...
Sure.
You know,
yeah. That's a good point.
Throwing a lot at Alan at once.
Yeah.
Well, it's voluntary.
That's true, but it doesn't mean it has to be so fast. opinion.
Well, Gil, I hear what you're saying. I'm holding the contemplation from that perspective. And I think what's inside me is perceiving of a sort of lost opportunity of some sort. It doesn't necessarily mean a lost opportunity to change or convert or fix this other person. But it's not, to me, it's not satisfying enough just to hear what he had to say and nod and drift off.
Yeah.
That to be fully present and fully awake, fully vulnerable, and fully alive in that moment, I left feeling that unsatisfied, or that some moment of potential was left unfilled, and that's why it's coming around again. So there's a yearning that is very personal, which is to be free enough to show up fully in that situation. Like it was really easy for me to show up fully and receive the thanks of all the homeless people on behalf of all the volunteers and Reverend Nick and the, you know, First Presbyterian Church and everybody who put that whole event together. It was beautiful. But I found myself quite sort of less than fully present when this particular moment showed up.
So I think that what the missing link here for me listening to you is that you keep looking at the results, the response that you were supposed to have, the ideal you're supposed to have, and you want to be fully present, which is nice. But the missing link is you were fully present for the situation you're in. Something in you lost that full presence mm-hmm. in the contact with him.
Yeah.
And for you to take responsibility for that, in that how you lost it, not looking for the solution. So it's something in you needs addressing, something in mm-hmm. you needs to be understood, something in you needs to be settled, but needed to be settled before you even met him. Before you even met him, there mm-hmm. was a trigger in there.
Mm-hmm.
So what was that trigger, and what would it take to settle that trigger before thinking about the right way to respond?
Well, let's see. Does anyone else have any words?
Well, just one thing. I can only speak for myself, but I totally empathize with what you're saying, and we all have triggers. I agree with Letitia's start, the acknowledgement, nothing's wrong, but you said a magic word, you said beautiful, and you were apparently, obviously, present with the beauty of the event. I just wonder if it would have been a bit of a refuge and a path back to that presence to go back into that and maybe share just some of the beauty that you felt about the event that was maybe even non-religious, just the human sharing of resources from those with more to those with less.
The thing I was wondering, were you, you said a couple times.
Can I interject a second? I need to speak up again. I like it for people to imagine themselves in the same situation and play with it, you know, because I just think we're starting to veer into giving a little bit too much. This is a group exploration about we could all be in this situation too, so that's why I just want to add, because mm-hmm. I don't want to keep trying to fix it
right.
for the one person who was Good. Generous enough to raise a difficult situation, because really what we're trying to experience here is what it's like to kind of have a colleague present a situation, and what do you do with it? You can work with them and that part of it, but you can also open it up to say, I've been there before, or I'm glad I wasn't in that situation, or I too am intimidated by big, large, angry men in the midst of beautiful situations, and my heart shuts down. I'm like a steel trap. So I think, and this is to Gil and Paul, I think we're just getting a little too, there's been a lot offered already for Alan. Truth-telling, I guess. Sorry, guys.
Well, why don't you say what you want to say, Barbara, and then, Alan, you can tell us how it is all for you now. Like, whether you want us to cut, like, okay, thank you very much, we're done. Or whether you want to proceed.
This is related to how I think part of my response would be, and there was a couple of times you said, like, missed opportunity, and I wondered if What I'm wondering is, is there a part of you that wish you had said something to change him or to make him hear? Because you've mentioned a few times his response and the phrase missed opportunity, as if you could have said something that would have, you know, put a light bulb off in his head or sparked a conversion of some sort. That's what I was wondering, because that's how I often feel, like, oh, I should have said blah, 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 because, you know, they would have, you know.
I was at least somewhat cut free from hope and fear with regard to his response. This wasn't about that I thought that I had the, you know, the power to unconvert him, but that I owed myself and him the non-random precision of that moment, the sort of integrity or sacredness of that moment, to show up as fully as possible, and then he would take from that, you know, whatever he would take. But I would feel like I had met that moment. That's the flavor of what felt incomplete.
And how about that? How about now? Mm-hmm. How do you feel now, having heard the various comments? How do you feel?
I feel like it's really enriching to sort of share a lot with a heart peer group, and to sort of turn the inside private narrative out. It's humbling and creates a sense of vulnerability and trust to do that.
Yeah.
And I feel great in this moment, in that sense of the trust of doing that. And, you know, everybody's comments are poignant and have a kind of wisdom and accuracy. So, you know, really appreciative. You know, wondering whether it's too much time on one person's drama.
I was thinking the same thing. Maybe that was just, if it's okay with you, we could just say, okay, and see, does someone else have a situation or an interaction that they'd like to share?
Wendy, go ahead. Go ahead.
There's part of me that really likes being in the hot seat. And I was also totally terrified by it. But this is a safe space. The interaction that I wanted to share was really the moment was very brief. It was at night on the streets in the Tenderloin. I was walking around. I was alone, but I was walking. There was another night minister. We had met up, and then we were kind of for an hour walking separately, and then we're going to meet up again after. And there was this man, this very kind of welcoming, talkative, friendly guy who was just kind of packing up kind of like a food stall thing that he had set up on the sidewalk. It was he called it his hustle. It was like he had a little grill and some other like containers of food, and he was just selling food at night to people. Things felt like they were going really well, and I was kind of, this was like, it sometimes takes me a little bit to get warmed up when I'm walking, and this was like a really positive interaction. I felt like we were connecting, we were listening to each other, and at one point we kind of like shared each other's names and shook hands and kind of, and then at the end, so then, I don't know, the whole interaction was maybe 10 minutes, 15 minute conversation. And then at the end, when we were saying goodbye, I had my hands in my jacket, and, and it was cold, and that was it's kind of like this like secure, like safety for me. And we sort of said goodbye, and he kind of like looked down at my hands in my pockets, almost as though like he was wanting to shake hands to say goodbye, which, as I've experienced, is kind of like that. It's a kind of connection that people really appreciate. And I didn't do that. And then as I was walking away, I heard him mumble something, which in my mind, what it registered as was him saying you don't even care about me enough to shake my hand, or like, what am I not deserving of that respect, or you look down on me, that was the flavor of this kind of jumble of words that I heard as I was walking away. And I sort of like half looked back, but then this fear kind of pulled me away, and it was, it was this fear of like, oh, everything just went bad. and let me just like kind of move away and like avoid the discomfort, because there was this sort of flash of discomfort that came up. And I just sort of, I couldn't turn back, and just sort of kept walking, and it really haunted me, kind of, that I wasn't able to actually just turn and say like, oh, what was that? Or, and like, I totally would have, you know, gone over and shaking his hand or whatever it was, but yeah, this was a couple months ago, and it's really stuck with me as a moment where I froze up and then didn't I couldn't roll with it. I sort of just went away, kind of collapsed in my own discomfort. Yeah.
So as one chaplain to another, do you have any comment or question you'd like to bring to Kay?
I can totally commiserate on not sticking the landing. And you're like, oh, I'm walking away with that deep feeling of, yeah, like I said, not sticking the landing. And I don't think we're supposed to share stories. I think we're just supposed to comment, right? Okay, that's the, yeah.
Not specifically your story, but if I, in listening to both of the stories, what's readily apparent for me is that moments of fear are limiting. They keep us from connecting with others. When we have that flash of fear, and not, I honestly am. I'll just say it. I think fear is natural. I think the fear is your body's way of saying, hey, this doesn't feel safe to me. Mm. Okay? And I don't think that for me, fear is going to go away anytime soon. Like I'm not that at that level of practice where I'm the bodhisattva that's walking into the fire. I'm not that person. I'm going to feel that moment of fear. But what I'm, as I sit and listen to both of you, it's like, how can I more quickly recover from that moment? Not erase it, not act like I'm beyond it. How can I acknowledge it and then quickly recover and allow my heart to reopen again? It would be great to say I'm going to stay open through every situation that's going to happen. I'm not there. So how can I get into the practice of having that experience, recognizing it in my body, letting it do what it does, and then come back in my natural, normal heart of compassion quickly? That's the question.
Thank you for sharing that, Latisa. And I think in this circumstance with me, I just I know mistakes will happen. I know I will get gripped with fear at times, and I think the piece where I judge myself is. Having this ideal that I can do that in the moment, like I trust that kind of if I allow myself to stumble in front of another person, we can stumble together and it'll be totally fine. But it's the like not being able to. Wanting to hide, I think, not wanting to show that I did just stumble. And I think that's where I judge myself in that circumstance. And so now it's more of just living, like, can I just let that encounter go and just live with the learnings from it and the um, yeah, that particular encounter will be unresolved.
You walked away, and then what had happened if in the course of moving around the Tenderloin you ended up actually coming back to where you was and saw him a second time that evening? How would you approach him then, given what happened?
Yeah, I would, had he still been there, I would have gone up and say, hey, you know, I feel like at the end of our conversation, you know, it felt like something didn't sit right, or it felt, I heard you say something and I wasn't sure what it was, and I just wanted to I know it's like I'm wanting to like make it better. Like asking like, like, are we good? Or, you know, I wasn't sure if maybe it was that I didn't shake your hand at the end, and, you know, I just want to say, like, I totally would have, and I will now. And I'm sorry if in the moment that had an impact that didn't sit well with you.
Are we good? Can we leave it there?
I'm good.
Thanks.
Can I make one comment?
Sure.
I just noticed for both these stories and in my own experiences that it feels like a sense of completeness to the conversation or the interaction that's missing in like both of these cases, that something just didn't sit right and just needed a little bit more salt or like a little bit like seasoning just to kind of finish it up. And then even reflecting my own personal experiences, it's kind of the same thing where it's like, oh, there's the contraction or the fear or the unknowing, and then it derails us and then something doesn't get completed. And that's just an observation that through you guys' sharing I noticed in myself too. So thank you.
I think this is a situation which happened last month. I think I shared with a couple of people in this room, so bear with me if it's a repetition for you. But so I went to one of the patient's room. Patient was in his 50s. He had some trauma or some serious surgery, and he was barely able to talk. I couldn't understand what he was saying. And his wife was there. I think patient was in this late 50s, and she was early 50s probably. But in any case, I tried to communicate with the patient, and the patient would make some facial gestures, so I could not understand. So I ended up talking to his wife. So the initial conversation, everything went very smoothly. And the reason I went is because, you know, in this particular case, his religious preference was no religious preference. So that's why I was allowed to kind of meet this person. So most of the cases when I talk to these patients who have no religious preference, you know, if I'm doing a prayer, it's something like a compassion practice prayer or a loving kindness prayer, meditation prayer. So my intent was not to preach any religion. Clearly, that was the stated. So we were talking, and because he said, "Oh, here it says no religious preference." So I asked, how is that? So, did you always have no religious preference? So they said, no. We've been in the Bay Area for the 20 years, so we haven't been to the church, but we used to go to the church in the past. Oh, so that means, are you a Christian faith? I said, yeah, I'm a Christian faith. And, of course, she could see my name tag, so she could. And so she started asking about my upbringing. So I said, currently I'm doing Buddhist chaplaincy. I grew up in India, so as a practicing Hindu. So she knew about my background. So we had a fairly decent conversation. I thought, for the case of this particular patient, can I offer a prayer? So she looked at me and said, "Oh, you're not a Christian. I don't want you to pray." That was kind of suddenly abrupt. I said, okay, what did I do wrong here? So, okay, I respect your opinion, and I walked away. But I kept reflecting, should I have done something different? What should I have done which would have been the... In other words, somehow it felt a little bit incomplete to me. I don't know I could have done differently because it's fairly new in the volunteering service. I didn't sort of get into the dialogue why you don't want me to do the prayer and all the debate, right? But I respected the decision. So just wanted to share. So
well, I just had a question. Do you think that she had the impression when you said prayer, you meant Christian prayer? Or?
No, I did not say it's Christian prayer. Okay. I just said, can I offer a prayer? So my intent was to do just a loving kindness meditation. So
I wanted her impression, though.
Yeah, good question. I didn't ask her. So, yeah. So but one thing which she clearly said, that because you're not of Christian faith, I don't want you to do the prayer. So.
Anyone who hasn't spoken yet
in this session want to make a comment or ask a question of Sri?
Thank you for sharing that. I'm curious how it was for you when she made that comment at the end.
I felt somehow that I was not fully prepared to answer her question. In other words, maybe if there was a skillful means of answering in a polite way, like maybe Alan asked, I was not planning to do a Christian prayer, but more of a non-denominational prayer, that might have clarified the situation, but maybe something to consider for the future. So,
I have something to say. If I was in that situation, if somebody said to me, "I don't want you to pray," that'd be one thing. If they said to me, "I don't want you to pray because of who you are or what you believe," that's something very different. It's kind of a, there's a she, for me, it would be like a rejection, mm-hmm. or a judgment on my faith. Mm-hmm. And as somebody with a, who's already in the minority, if you will. There's already a sense of isolation, and this whole tradition comes out of Christianity, and then they have somebody say, "Well, and you're not a Christian, so no." That's a pretty big pill to swallow. Chapman's worst nightmare, you know? Like, oh my God, that's my worst fear too, that would reject me because I'm not Christian. So I think it's a good experience to go through just to get accustomed to it, you know what I mean? Because it will happen again, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I think it's just kind of like getting used to it. You know, I don't think there's any right or wrong, you know, could have been a prevented or what to say after, you know, that person's point of view is still true for them.
AJ is coming in.
Coming in?
AJ is joining us, so let's take a moment to just say hello and to let her know what's happening. Hi, AJ.
Hi, sorry for the interruption, you guys.
Yes, that's fine. But there's a little pause here, just to let you know that this session here, we're doing case studies about experiences people have had in chaplaincy, the challenges they've had. And so there's been a discussion, and that's what this focus discussion on. And we probably have another almost 15 minutes that was scheduled for this session, so I think that you came at a nice gap. So we'll see how it develops from here.
And I welcome AJ. I wonder if some of you could comment on what do you learn from hearing that particular interaction, like how does that impact you, and how does it inform your chaplaincy?
I just wanted to say, kind of in this moment of pause, that Sage let me know that she went home because she isn't feeling well. So,
okay,
that's where she is.
I want to say that, like, all the stories so far, my reaction was, like, you're all so brave to have done something to elicit a reaction from other people. Because I feel like I subconsciously am fearing these things, so I don't even make the interaction in the first place. So, you know, so it was really helpful for me to hear these stories. And for Sri, I feel like that is exactly the scenario I find myself in the hospice that I'm at, because it's a Catholic one. And like the sisters know that I'm coming from a Buddhist program, but the patients don't really have an idea. And of course, like, they're not necessarily Catholic either. So I found myself not even offering the prayer option because I was afraid of this scenario. And I guess, like, upon hearing your story, I was thinking, you know, if I was in that situation, of course, this is with hindsight, like, would I have said something like, you know, I understand you're of Christian faith and I'm of, you know, my background, is it okay for me to offer prayer? And if, you know, she still said no, then I would have already, like, armed myself against that answer by saying, acknowledging that she might reject me. But I don't, I don't know if that, like what happened in your situation seems like it would have happened anyway. So now I'm realizing that, like, it's better to maybe disclose a little bit and associate that with the idea of prayer a little earlier, but I'm not really sure.
Hmm.
Yeah, I would just like to say, I think this is just kind of a general statement that it just underlines that one can expect the unexpected, and that some of the unexpected will be not necessarily pleasant, and those very things we can expect may repeat and become expected and happen again. And for me personally, it really boils down to working on my mindfulness practice, which is the base, the basis of the whole thing that even drove me into this, and that really cool things like Sri mentioned, the preparation before going in, routines, rituals are very important in helping support that.
I've been in the same situation, but on the phone, on San Francisco Night Ministry on the phone, where I've listened to someone, and then towards the end of the call, I always try to offer them, you know, would you like a prayer or a meditation or something to kind of close the call? And there was just recently, actually, one call where I'd listened to this young lady, and she was clearly very, very Christian, and it was very important to her. So I did disclose that I'm not a Christian, I'm actually Buddhist. And then when I offered the prayer, of course, she did not want it. And I understood, because when I was a Christian, it was like, if you didn't believe in God and if you weren't a Christian, then you were of the devil. And there was no in between. And so her not wanting me to pray let me know that that was maybe some of her beliefs, that, you know, any prayer that doesn't come under the name of God, specifically from a Christian, it could potentially be demonic. And so at the end of the day, I was like, okay, no problem. Have a wonderful day. Because what I want is for that caller to leave feeling better. And if my prayer, my offering prayer, my praying for them makes them feel somehow less settled, then the whole rest of the 15 minutes that I spent kind of doing all this work on reflective listening and everything else was not helpful at all and negates it. So for me, it was just, first of all, happy to disclose, because at the end of the day, I don't want to be deceptive when this is such an important part of your... Now, others I will disclose or not disclose, because it's not... You can tell it's not so much a part of their belief system. But when it's really important, I want them to be comfortable with having a prayer from me. I don't want to break any of their kind of core value belief system. So I'm okay with them rejecting. It does feel like rejection, but it's kind of not about me. Hmm.
Anyone else have any learnings that they want to share about this?
I'd like to talk a little bit about self-care. I've really appreciated all the stories, all these experiences that you shared, and when I listen to them, I feel like each one has... we all have emotional responses when we're alive, awake. And I feel like each one's had a base of fear, maybe shame. I think it's so important to acknowledge that for ourselves. And I'm saying that because I recently had an experience in my... I'm still training with the... I will be with the chaplains at the hospital. And I was having I was beset by fear. And one of the chaplains, who's a Buddhist and a Christian, just sat down with me. And she asked the question I put to you, Alan, like, how do you feel in your body? And I said, I'm really tight in my stomach and my hands are really cold. So she held my hands, and I couldn't believe how warm her hands were. And then she asked me how old I was. And that really just took me to a very deep place,
because I think we get so many fearful experiences as children, and they're not resolved lots of times. You know, we just keep on going because that's what we see the adults do in our lives. So to say the truth, and I didn't want to say that I was 7 years old, but I was. And what consequently happened for me is that I woke up. I, you know, she really, so I just, I was able to acknowledge how I felt, what was up for me, and I was able to, like, let go of all that and come into the hospital the next time and say, okay, I want to do it this way now. So, for instance, I said to them, I don't want to be shadowed now. I just want to go do it, because I was having this thing about being shadowed. It was scaring me. I guess that's my long story, but I just want to say for each of us, what we're doing is we're gonna feel and do better if we take care of ourselves. So, and I didn't say this part. The chaplain said, this is what we always did in the CPE training. We'd come in and we'd say, how do you feel in your body? How old are you? It was like part of, I don't know where she got trained, but that was a great couple tools.
Thanks for that couple of tools. Anyone else want to make a comment before we end? We'll end in 2 or 3 minutes. This notion of coming across unfinished business, you know? And then what do we do with it, you know? Can we go backwards and fix it? Well, for one, we can't go backwards, so that's not going to work. Is it really a matter of fixing it? Or as Rachel Naomi Remen says, healing. You know? What's the healing? I think the healing is close to the learning, you know? Maybe we're searching for, maybe emotionally, for a particular kind of closure. Well, the closure would be if that person came back to me and said, I take it all back. You're a lovely person. And what you're doing is great. And I feel joyous. Thank you. Can we... can we learn / heal, you know? And can we accept, you know? I mean, if you think about it, this is a Buddhist chaplaincy course. This is not a Christian chaplaincy course. And yet, in one way or another, the majority of people in our society reference more in terms of having a theology in contrast to a dharmology or a buddhology, maybe. So each person challenged to discover how does each one of us, in the being the person we are, how do we discover, okay, well, this is the situation, and how will I hold that in my own being, you know? How will I hold instances seem to display a gap. You know? How will I learn the cues for when it's appropriate to say this? Would you like to pray together? And when it's not, you know. But to stay in learning mode, you know? Oh, yeah. This is the process of learning the intrapersonal skills and the interpersonal skills of being a chaplain. Okay? I like that phrase. Are we good? No. So we will take a break and do the cleanup, empty the garbage, give the bathrooms a quick cleaning, straighten up our lunchtime stuff, okay? And then we come back in 15 minutes. Thank you.